So when you're seeing situations like that, it's going to be ugly when they reach resolution on some of those things. And with some of those large sponsors that say, you know what, here's the keys, I'm going to walk away.
Good morning. It is April 8th. This is Deconstruct, a podcast by The Real Deal. And I'm Susanna Cavanaugh. Isabella is out today, so it's just you and me taking a closer look at the perilous wall of maturities. It feels like it's been a year at this point that real estate has been shooting up flares about all of the CMBS debt set to come due, and the worries are around interest rates, right? Refinancing in a higher rate environment, it's never fun. But the office sector was really pegged as the problem child here. At the risk of telling you something you already know, the story is that remote work hurt occupancy, especially in Class B buildings. Loans are now coming due, rates are higher, owners are having a tough time paying their mortgages. So that's the narrative the industry has largely accepted. But as I mentioned, that's been the tale for a bit now. So we thought it was time for a temp check on what's actually going on with these maturing CMBS office loans. So are they doomed? Are there workouts? What is happening in special servicing? We've got Moody's Analytics on today to get into those questions. They recently produced a report on CMBS office maturities, and we'll be picking through that. First, here's the top stories of last week. So Mag Week was last week, and we had a number of colorful, some spicy profiles. Our cover story is by Keith Larson, a senior reporter. And it's a vibrant character sketch of Neer Meyer. He's the former executive of HFZ. He was arrested and extradited to Rikers in February for masterminding a multi-year $86 million fraud, as Keith writes it.
Up in court looking pretty haggard. He had gray hair, handcuffs, and many bald spots. Neer pleaded not guilty, and he spoke for a couple minutes saying he was a great citizen. He had served for a number of years in the IDF. He was trying to work here in New York to provide for his family. In court, Neer said he had no assets. A few weeks ago, he had declared bankruptcy, saying he only had $50 to his name. But Neer had been living at the one hotel in Miami Beach, a Shishi Hotel. Before that, he was living at the Four Seasons Hotel, an even Shishier hotel.
That's Keith outlining the early innings of Meyer's trial. The hotel stays are the absolute tip of the iceberg for this investor. His life leading up to his arrest was a maelstrom of extravagance, parties, escorts, and also deceit. So if you want a roller coaster ride, give this a read. Rich Bachman had a piece on Jeff Sutton. He's a retail king who came to real estate by way of cameras, as he tells it. The interview with Sutton offers snapshots of his strategy, some deals with Prada and Gucci, a workaround he hammered out with the late Sam Zell, and also a chance meeting with Floyd Mayweather Jr. at a Knicks game. Apparently, he didn't know who the boxer was. And then we also had some hefty defaults. So my favorite building in Brooklyn and the borough's tallest, 9 DeKalb, was hit with a UCC foreclosure in late March. 9 DeKalb, for those better with faces than names, is the Gothic tower in downtown Brooklyn that some say looks like Barad-dûr. That's for our Lord of the Rings fans. Star Wars groupies will say it has a Darth Vader vibe. Developer Michael Stern defaulted on that $240 million mezzanine loan tied to the building that was issued by Larry Silverstein's Silverstein Capital Partners. And rising rates look to be the culprit. The auction there is slotted for June 10th. It's a UCC foreclosure, which takes way less time than a traditional foreclosure in New York State. And then in syndicator land, Nitya Capital missed its maturity date on a $356 million loan that's backed by a dozen multifamily buildings. So Nitya, which is run by Swapnil Agarwal, was another big buyer when rates were low. Now rates are higher, and syndicators who, by and large, borrowed with floating rate debt are watching their rate caps expire. Rate caps are a hedge against rising rates. They have become much more expensive now that interest rates have risen, and some groups just do not have the money to buy new ones. Agarwal, who talked to us for the first time, said he's in the process of refinancing certain assets. He said he needs more time to figure out the rate cap situation. but he stressed that he is not in default. He said he's in forbearance with the special servicer. Isabella had that story, and we'll be keeping an eye on whether Nitya charts a path to writing those loans. It has sold off properties in the past, but with rates high and valuations much lower than they were when these syndicators built their portfolios a few years back, selling is tough. You want to get enough to cover your debt, but the question is, are buyers willing to pay that much? All right, we'll leave the news there, and we'll turn to my chat with Kevin Fagan and Matt Reedy of Moody's Analytics on the state of CMBS office maturities. Can you each introduce yourselves?
My name is Kevin Fagan, work in our commercial real estate operating unit at Moody's Analytics. I'm a senior director here and head up our capital markets research team.
And my name is Matt Reedy. I'm a director of economic research, and I work with Kevin on capital markets.
I wanted to start with a vibe check of sorts. It seems like for over a year now, we keep hearing about this swell of maturities. And there are a lot of worries tied to that around refinancings. And we're in the midst of the wall now. So I wanted to ask you both, to what degree were those worries valid, given what we've seen so far?
The worries are definitely valid. It takes time for us to start to see the credit impacts from things like this, though. And if you think about the GFC starting in September of 2008, it took a couple of years, really. And that was a very intense liquidity event for the market, a much greater actually impact than what you would expect right now. And that took a couple of years basically before we started to see delinquency rates, you know, really start to shoot up and get to their peak. So it takes time for this to come through. I do think that there's a probably ability to manage this better than the GFC. You know, there's a lot of mechanisms in place that both that we learn lessons from the GFC as well as the regulators encouraging workouts and extensions and allowing the dust to settle a little bit rather than go right into default and liquidations. So there's protections this time around, but we're going to see headlines around defaults and liquidations coming up related to these maturities. And it's definitely a pain point for banks and other lenders.
I mean, I'll add to that just for 2024, there's over $900 billion total of commercial real estate loans maturing. And last year, the new origination volume was less than $500 billion. So that's a significant gap from what's maturing in this upcoming year. So unless there's a significant uptick in volume, you're definitely going to see a lot of those loans not be able to find a source of repayment or refinance at least. And we really haven't seen a whole lot going on in the market to give us an indication that we think there's going to be a significant increase in lender volume this year. Certainly not double, which is what it would really take to pay off everything that's maturing this year.
Would you say that's largely tied to the expectation that interest rates will remain higher for longer?
That's at least a part of it, for sure. There's also the fact there's still a lot of uncertainty, especially around the office sector, on how things are going to work out over the next couple of years. That's also keeping some lenders at least on pause related to office. And just some of the headlines around banking in general also make it hard for banks to be very active in real estate, at least.
So I'm going to throw some numbers out there. I'm pulling from your report. There was $1.15 billion in CMBS office debt that came due in January and February, and that's fully extended maturities. And the payoff rate in January was 55%. In February, it was about 25%. How should we think about those numbers? Like, is 55% good if we compare it to payoffs historically?
When we compare it to last year, it is better than what we saw for last year. All of 2023 came in at about 35%. Now, that said, 2023 was the worst year on record for, and again, this is CMBS office maturities, just to be specific. So it was the worst year on record. Over the past 10 years, we've probably been closer to 80%+ of those loans paying off when they reach their final maturity. So yes, 55 is a little bit better than the 35 we saw last year, but it's definitely nowhere near what we're used to seeing over time.
Okay. And does that 25% in February, does that designate a downward trend there in payoff rate?
Not necessarily. I mean, the rate does tend to bounce around a lot because in some months you may only have two or three or four loans that hit that final maturity. So it doesn't take much for that rate to move around. And just to that point, I will highlight, with the higher payoff rate in January, a good chunk of that was the result of one loan. There was a loan on a portfolio of Google and Amazon occupied properties in Sunnyvale that was over $400 million that paid off in January. So that's driving a good chunk of that strong January number. When you're looking at it on a month-by-month basis, one or two loans can make a big difference, which is why in the report, especially, we've talked about that maybe it's a little bit too early to make too many judgments yet for the year, just because even though it's been over $1 billion, it's still not a significant number in size of loans maturing.
Right. You want a larger sample before you make a call.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. So when we think about a CMBS office loan being repaid, refinanced or not, what are the biggest factors that go into that, the characteristics about the building or the loan itself?
The biggest things that we're looking at and we have seen through last year, it turned out to be a very good indicator, is we look at the cash flow on the property, which we're measuring by using the debt yield of the property, which is just what's the cash flow divided by the debt. So it sort of incorporates the cash flow and the leverage into one metric that makes that a little bit easier to do for comparison purposes. It sort of takes differences in interest rate and other things on the loan out of the equation and just says, what's your cash flow, what's your debt, and what's that ratio look like?
It's also thought of like the cap rate you'd have to sell the debt at to not take a loss on the debt. Some people think of it that way as well.
Yep, for sure. And then the other thing that we're looking at is the current vacancy rate plus any leases that are rolling over within the next 3 years. So short run lease maturities, we'll say. So if a building currently has a high level of vacancy or has a significant number of leases rolling over in the next 3 years, that's a material risk of causing a significant decline in those cash flows. And it's something that a lender is going to be pretty concerned about. If they look at a property and even if the cash flow is strong today, half of the leases roll in 2 years, they're pretty unlikely to make a loan on that property unless they have some certainty around those tenants renewing when the leases mature or the leases expire.
What's the threshold for what's considered high vacancy in this environment?
Well, the average, Kevin, did we hit 20% in our most recent number or just under 20% for vacancy on average?
No, the highest on record was 19.2, at least by our record, which was 1991. We did exceed that. I think we're sitting at 19.4 or 19.6 right now.
Yeah, so we're just under 20% on average. So yeah, and I think some of it just also depends on what the cash flow is relative to that level.
So turning to special servicing, I'm curious, when loans transfer, they go into negotiations, the sponsor is hoping for a workout. If you can put a finger on this, I know there's a number of different situations, but to what degree are those loans being worked out, and which are not, and what differentiates the two?
For the 2024 data, it's a little bit too early to tell because it does take some time for servicers and borrowers to come to agreement on extensions or other modifications. But we can look at the 2023 data. Again, I mentioned in 2023, 35% of office maturities paid off. So of the other 65%, we did see 29% that did reach a modification or extension terms with the lenders. And the other 36% are just sort of hanging out there in limbo as they try to figure out what to do with them, basically. About half of what did not pay off was officially extended or modified. The other half, they are just sort of out there still.
Okay, just hanging out still. Why is that happening? I know people don't like to trash special servicers, but is that because the special servicer is sort of making things go on longer than it needs to be? Or is it just because it's difficult to come to an agreement?
Yeah, I mean, this is a highly negotiated process, basically. So there's a determination of value going on. There's a check to see if the borrower has actually done their due diligence to find, you know, tenants or get LOIs on empty space.
Can you define LOI?
Letter of intent, meaning you have a tenant that is going to be moving into a vacant space. You don't want a tenant to be like, for instance, in a nefarious situation, you don't want a borrower to be hiding the fact that they have an LOI on a tenant so that they can get a workout on their stressed property before they get the workout. So you want to make sure that they've done their due diligence on that. You want to come to some agreement on value, which is really difficult these days. If you look across all the different indications of where values have been going, say peak to current over the last few years for office, you can see a really, really wide variance across like indices and other kinds of measures of where value is. There's not enough transactions to get clarity on that right now. So that value conversation is very tough right now. You want to see that the borrower is going to invest in the property. So maybe you put some CapEx reserves on it. Maybe you have them do a recap with some additional equity injection. You want to make sure that they're investing in the property. Maybe the property needs a reposition to be more competitive in the current environment. So it's a difficult conversation. It isn't just sort of a binary yes, no thing. It's an intense negotiation. So I think actually, you know, conversely to being critical of special servicers, they got an extremely tough job that, frankly, I think they're doing pretty well right now, given the volume of and complexity of the issues.
I'll just add in that the current uncertainty, as I mentioned earlier, around office right now also makes it challenging because there are situations where the borrower may decide at maturity to hand the keys back to the lender, or that they're not willing to put additional money into the property, in which case then the servicer is left with pretty limited options, and the time to resolve those types of situations becomes much more protracted.
What have you all seen as far as foreclosures as they relate to office? Have there been a number? I feel like I just have sort of anecdotal evidence reporting there. And do you expect there to be more in 2024 or maybe in 2025?
So for 2023, we tracked of the loans that reached maturity in 2023, what the liquidations were. It was actually pretty low. There's $20 million of maturities last year that were liquidated within the year. Now, there's definitely going to be some that get liquidated as we go further down the line. But I think for some of, at least from maturity-related default foreclosure liquidation, I think it's a little too early to tell what we're going to see in that just because of the time that it takes to reach that resolution. That said, we have seen situations where some very large institutional buyers have handed over the keys to properties, whether or not it's at maturity, regardless of the maturity situation. We've seen Brookfield hand over the keys on several properties. Just last week, I think it was Starwood, Kevin, right, that handed over the keys on a few properties. So when you're seeing situations like that, it's going to be ugly when they reach resolution on some of those things. And with some of those large sponsors that say, you know what, here's the keys, I'm going to walk away.
In terms of expectations, I think we definitely are going to see headlines around some high loss severity liquidations this year. But I think it's going to be a barbelled story. I don't think we're going to see a deluge of that. There's like, again, you know, the OCC and other regulators are encouraging lenders to work with the borrowers to smooth out the situation. You can definitely feel among the real estate community more and more that there's a clear understanding that this isn't an obsolescence story, meaning offices aren't just poof going away. There's just a repricing going on right now and a sort of a search for certainty. And what does quality mean right now? We actually saw sales up in Q4 for year over year for office. So there's definitely an appetite for office still, both from a usability standpoint as well as an investment standpoint. So it's going to be a mixed bag over the next year, basically. For sure, at least the next year. And so we will see some headlines of some big losses coming up. And by the way, you know, you talk about servicers taking a little while. One thing that's highly correlated with loss severity is the time to resolution. So like the longer it takes, typically the higher loss severity you see. And so given that these resolutions are taking a while, we probably will see above average loss severities over the next year or two for loans that default and actually are liquidated. But I don't think that the direness of the kind of popular picture of what's happening with office is likely to be what actually happens. It's going to be a much more nuanced story, but we're going to see an intense focus on these headlines we're going to see of high loss severity situations coming up this year.
Deconstruct airs every Monday on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen on therealdeal.com. For comments on this episode, you can email podcast@therealdeal.com. Next week, we're taking a look at what legislation has been passed to ease the process of office to residential conversions. Tune in then.